This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 241, where AC and I are live from the North American Collaboration Summit 2018.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
What an intro. I don't think we've ever had an intro like that.
I just realized that we're broadcasting live on Facebook, so me doing this to everybody to get them to go loud, that wasn't really subtle.
Should have been like this, right? Like. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, thank you all very much for joining us live today. For those of you who don't know us, which is probably 99% of the audience, right?
Something like that.
We run this little podcast called the Microsoft Cloud Show, and we broadcast or publish once a week. You can go check us out on iTunes or on Overcast or Google Play and things like that. But we have this sort of weekly get-together where AC and I talk about the latest news and goings-on in the Microsoft cloud world. And when Mark spoke to us about coming to the show, we thought, what better place to come to talk to 300 folks about everything going on in the Microsoft cloud world and do a live show? So we're all very thankful for you coming along today, and we hope you get something out of this. AC and I love doing this every week, if for no other reason than to get together and joke around every Tuesday morning when we record. And it's just a good excuse for us to get together and keep up on all the latest goings on. So that's what we're doing up here. Anything to add?
No, nothing to add. I would say thank you very much for everyone who's shown up here. Feel free, you know, take pictures, post stuff on Twitter, getting the word out. Word of mouth is the best way for us to reach new listeners and everything. So if you take a picture, you know, say that you're here, make sure you tag the hashtag Collab Summit and hashtag or at mention the MS Cloud Show. We'd really appreciate it here. So, well, one of the things that we do when we start out our show is CJ just have a little bit of banter where we just kind of shoot the breeze back and forth a bit. Before we did that, though, I thought that we would have a nice little call out to someone in the audience. Is Tommy here? Oh, I should check and see if people are in the audience before. This is the second time I've done this now today.
And Tommy from Austria?
Tommy from Austria.
If it narrows it down?
That would really narrow it down here, I think. So last week we had a Twitter exchange, a kind of a joke going on with Jason Himmelstein and John White and their podcast, The Bifocal Show. And we were saying, like, who's got people that have come the farthest? And someone chimed in and said, yeah, I'm coming thousands of miles over there. And Tommy just jumps in and says, yeah, I'm coming from 10 miles away from the Iron Curtain. So mic drop, right? We're like, oh, okay, we got this. This is good. So Tommy, hey, thanks a lot for showing up at the show. He's actually been presenting sessions as well. So it's been a lot of fun to meet some of our listeners here.
That's probably the record for the most furthest distance traveled for a show, right? I'm sure maybe somebody in ISS is tuning in right now, maybe an astronaut. Oh. We like to cover space topics on the show as well for no other reason than it interests us.
Past the cloud.
And so if you're up there in ISS, astronauts, please let us know. You're above the cloud, so we'd love that.
Yeah.
So what are we doing here? This is the North America Collab Summit. And for those of you tuning in on Facebook, this is a conference in Branson, Missouri. This is my third time to Branson. Mark has had me back, fortunately, twice since my first visit. And for some reason, I keep agreeing. And I love coming to Branson because I live on the coast near ocean. And this is my real America experience, right? Obviously, I'm not from here. I sound a little funny. And so I come to the middle of the country and get my Branson experience. But, you know, Mark has obviously put the show on for a little while now. And we're very grateful that he does that. And there's a bunch of sessions here, a lot of great speakers. Mark, you're going to do this show again? I guess we should talk to you in a moment about this. But yeah, third, fourth time in a row?
Yeah, this is actually the sixth conference I've done. I started it in Harrison, Arkansas, and then moved it up to Branson. So number six. If my friends will let me do it again, I might do it again. Does the crowd want me to do it again, though? That's what I want to know.
Yeah! Okay. So the real question is will your wife let you do it again?
She's not a listener, so I can actually... But no, I'm not going to say anything.
I wouldn't recommend that. I tried that one time. My wife did listen. Don't do that.
So how's the show gone? Been a raving success, obviously, again. Lots of folks in the crowd here, so looks like it's going really well.
Yeah, I'm having a good time. It's, you know, I organize it and then just sit back and watch whatever happens happen, right? At that point, you can't do much about it. But no, it's been fun. We had a great party last night down at the Black Oak Grill. We brought in the band to play. Everybody seemed to have a good time, and it's been a lot of fun. Oh, we've been learning stuff too. So
every now and again.
Every now and again, yeah.
Excellent. Well, we hope you do it again, obviously. It's always a pleasure to come here and help out as best we can and go to a few sessions. The workshops, AC, I think, did a workshop on Wednesday, I think it was.
I forget what day. Oh, yeah, workshop on Thursday, I think it was.
Thursday.
Full-day workshop on Thursday, and he's doing a session this afternoon on the SharePoint framework as well. So.
Again, yeah, another session on that as well, yeah. So it's fun, though. So I'm doing the live podcast here, kind of outed myself during the keynote yesterday, which was a little... I didn't know how that went. I don't know if y'all thought that was funny or if it was kind of lame.
It was... No, I could hear you puckering from the crowd. So it was perfect.
That's good. I know you laughed at me, so I don't think you laughed with me, but you were definitely laughing at me. So.
I was laughing with you. No.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, hey, Mark, thanks a lot for having us here at the show and everything. And people want to sit there and follow the show, follow updates for doing the show again and everything. Where would you tell people to look? Where should they go to find more information about it?
On Twitter, you can follow us with hashtag Collab Summit. Our European conference, the European Collaboration Summit, also uses the same hashtag, so you can see some chatter for those guys as well. Maybe you go to Germany and go to that conference at the end of May. You can also go to our website, which is collabsummit.org, and I'll keep all the stuff updated there where you can find out where we're going, when we're going to be there, and all that awesome stuff.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot, Mark. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Now, for anybody who listens to the show regularly... We'd like to do picks at the end of the show. And so we have a couple of guests coming up today, and we sort of pre-warned them to make sure they bring a pick with them to discuss. And now picks can be anything from some new flavor of butter you've found that you like on your toast through to...
That was really random.
Well, I thought it did pop into me. What's the most random thing I could possibly... And I remembered an ad off TV yesterday. Apparently there's different flavored butter now. Anyway.
Mission accomplished. That was very random.
Random. Nice. Or it could be something to do with the cloud, or it could be something to do with Gadget or any sort of service you found recently. So not to put you on the spot, do you have a pick for the show?
I actually do have a pick for the show. So I actually wanted to just do a shout out to a Mason Jar Label. This is the t-shirt printing shop that actually designed all the t-shirts, designed the hat, designed the banner, the logo on the bags. All the previous events that I've done, the t-shirts, he's done the design for that. They do Matthew Bird over at Mason Jar Label does a phenomenal job. He actually started doing t-shirts for some of the SharePoint Saturdays. And that's how he really got started. I think he might have done some stuff before that. And if he has, I'm sorry for not saying that first. But anyway... So he did a lot of SharePoint Saturday shirts, and he started going to shows. Now he's making tens of the thousands of t-shirts a week. Like the Bucky's Superstores in Texas, they have a t-shirt stand in every Bucky's Superstore in Texas. So they're doing great stuff. And check out their website for a lot of cool t-shirt designs. But that's my pick.
Sounds like we need a new t-shirt producer for the Cloud Show.
I'm not objecting to that at all. Based on the prices we pay, I'm not objecting at all. Awesome.
Excellent.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks again, Mark. Cheers. Thanks, guys. Thanks for putting it on. Yep. Okay, so moving right along. We normally cover some news in each show, so we thought we'd dive into a couple of quick updates on Microsoft Cloud news before we dive into the meat and potatoes of the show today. So AC, do you want to kick us off with some news, or you want me to start? Or
Why don't you start? You got the mic in your hand.
All right, no worries. So it turns out, has everybody heard of Minecraft? Yeah?
I suspect Excellent. More than just responded that way.
Yeah. When my son plays Minecraft, I like to say he's being plugged into the Matrix because he sort of just, you know, zones in. But code.org is a website that Microsoft has built in collaboration with a bunch of other partners. But it's basically a place where young kids can go and start learning to code. And there's a post up on Medium from code.org this week saying that Minecraft has inspired 85 million youngsters on code.org, which I thought was absolutely breathtaking. Imagine all these elementary school students and younger and that sort of thing learning to code. Unfortunately, quite a lot of JavaScript is what I understand.
Unfortunately? What do you mean unfortunately?
Where are they ever going to use that? I mean, yeah. But yeah, and inspired with building games and programming and learning about for and while loops and logic and all those sorts of things that we do as programmers, which I thought was pretty impressive, approaching 100 million kids that have gone through that. That's incredible.
Yeah, that was a cool one that we saw there. Another one, too, that we saw that came across the wire. How many of you are using Slack as a communications tool inside your organizations? Right? Okay. How many of you are using Microsoft Teams? Right? Oh, more people are using Teams than Slack. So you need to Slack more. No, kidding. So one of the challenges that I know that people have had around Teams is the inability to do like external access, bringing people who are not within your organization into your Slack teams and being able to have external users participating in the team or in your Slack group, on your team's team. Does that mess anybody else up too? When you have team, it's a feature. It's
like, with a capital F.
Yeah, with a capital F. Lowercase T, the team, for your Microsoft Teams, capital T. Anyway, so this week or this month, they're rolling out some updates to Teams that's going to make it easier for people to do all of your, have external users come into your Microsoft Teams access. So have you seen this yet, how this works yet?
No? Nope, not yet.
So I haven't seen how this works just yet, exactly what, how smooth this is going to be or exactly how it's going to work. But they had announced guest access back in September that will allow organizations to create Teams accounts using any email address other than not just specific Azure AD accounts. So this feature is now being rolled out. Actually, this is being rolled out next week, and this announcement came out on my birthday, so they know what I was complaining about on February the 28th. So,
one thing I've spoken about on the show a little bit and that I think we're in pretty much solid agreement on is Microsoft's track record with external users and sharing is not particularly great. And it'll be interesting to see how they go with this in terms of how smooth it is and things like that. And I know we've spoken before about the difference between Microsoft and Google, that Google sort of seemed to start from a spot where external sharing first, and then they figure out about how to share and how to collaborate with people inside an enterprise later, whereas Microsoft's almost the complete opposite, where most of their products are built for internal work together first, and then they sort of try to bolt on the external collab pieces later. So we'll see if they've learned. I think this is like 3 or 4 strikes, so we hope they've nailed it this time, and it'll be nice and smooth, but the proof will be in the pudding, won't it?
Definitely be in the pudding.
Hey, speaking of naming problems, Google have announced this thing called Hangouts Chat by Google.
I'm lost.
What does that even mean? First they had Hangouts.
Yep.
Then they had Chat, I think. Mm-hmm. Or they still have Hangouts and still have Chat?
They still have Hangouts, they still have Chat, but now they have Hangouts Chat, which, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. Well, I'm lost. I think this is a Slack competitor, much like Teams and to Slack, obviously, to try and capture some of that same sort of team collaboration. You're in a, you know, it's IRC in a web browser, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. So that's what this is. Hangouts Chat by Google is their stake. It's like their version of Microsoft Teams, their version of Slack. It's their position now on this whole like collaboration through these lightweight tools and everything. So now they're jumping into it. It's just, of course, the way that the article is written is like, hey, stop me if you've heard this before. Google has another chat application, which is funny because I mean, you know, Microsoft has done how many chat applications? How many do we still have? Between Skype for Business, and all that other stuff still going on. But
Half a dozen,
yeah. But it's all, you know, thought a couple little collaboration stuff that's going on here in the Microsoft and Google world about changes that are afoot. And be interesting to see how everybody, do they come up with these all like Slack killers? Like everyone says that they're a Slack killer, but we still haven't really seen that so much across the board. Or is it just, like my vision of it, is that Slack is really still there for public use and for if you want to do like more like small business, startup kind of stuff like that, and being much more working with people outside of your organization, where Microsoft Teams is much more centered around an enterprise play, and then you can invite somebody from the outside to come in. But if you're creating, like, say, a group or a team or a collaboration space for everybody at this conference, I mean, I would think that it still would be the right place to go is to go to Slack and not go to Teams, because it's by nature, it's just everybody is across so many different organizations.
Yeah, and you know, Teams are coming out with the free version shortly, or that's the rumor, right? I don't know if anybody saw the leak last week that was sort of a pseudo-leak, and then it was kind of pseudo-confirmed, and then things were deleted, and so really, who knows? But I suspect we will shortly see a free version of Microsoft Teams come out, much like Slack, where there's a free tier that you can get started with, that it looks like Teams are coming out with the same kind of offering to kind of try to entice more sort of free-form, ad hoc kind of collab between smaller groups or dispersed groups and teams from around the world. Mm. We will have to watch this space. But there's been some very cunning folks in the community who've dug into this and seen in the Teams code itself, looking for SKU names and product names and things coming out, and have found some leads into what may become a free version of Teams.
Yep.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems and ever narrower timeframes with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focused on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out for free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/trynwc.
Okay, so moving right along, I found out that today marks the 10-year anniversary that Microsoft got into the cloud business. How interesting is that? 10 years. I think it was either today or yesterday. I may be embellishing slightly.
That's today. We're just going to call it that.
I'm from tomorrow anyway, so yeah, anyway. But anyway, 10 years in the cloud. And so for those of you who've been watching, there was this thing called BPOS many years ago, and that ultimately sort of became Office 365. And turns out that even before BPOS, Microsoft was running a set of cloud. Back then we didn't call it cloud, we just called it someone else's data center. But somebody else's infrastructure for them, and that was for Energizer. And it sort of got started with Exchange and running desktop services for Energizer. And Microsoft slowly kind of got into this over a period of time where they thought, you know, in typical Microsoft fashion, we can do it better than everybody else. And so they took IT from Energizer and learned a lot of hard lessons over the last 10 years, as I think many of us have experienced and seen from afar, that it actually is quite hard to run a cloud service. The products don't just put the CD in next, as much as we give IT pros grief as developers that really it's just going forward in a wizard. Turns out it's much harder than that. And so what ultimately was BPOS became Office 365, and then what we know as the service today. And then along the way, we've had other Microsoft cloud services like Azure. I was sitting at the back of the Professional Developers Conference in 2008, I think it was, where Ray Ozzie, who was the, I'm trying to not use an expletive here, brainchild of Lotus Notes. Anybody using Lotus Notes?
Our sympathies.
You could. It's okay. You're in a friendly environment. No? Okay. No notes. Excellent. So Ray Ozzie was the sort of the chief architect behind what ultimately became Azure. And what was it? Red Shoes or Red something? Red Dog?
Red Dog. That's it.
And that's why Scott Guthrie wears red shoes to this day, apparently.
Shirts
and shoes sometimes, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So yes, 10 years to the day. Can you believe we've been dealing with Microsoft Cloud for 10 years?
It's crazy. We've been dealing with it for 10 years. I think I was in that same session with you back in Los Angeles, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It's nuts to see how much, when you think about it, you know, it's only been 10 years. But as we're going to talk about in the show today, it's amazing like how much it's changed. Well, at least it's changed our lives. We couldn't have done this podcast without a Microsoft Cloud, I guess,
or yeah,
done another podcast. But it's still like how much it's actually changed our work lives and how we do business and how we interact with other people. I'm sure it's done the same thing with you as well. So strange people walking behind us on camera, huh?
Yeah, so what we thought we'd do is just briefly discuss kind of our history with Microsoft Cloud and how we kind of got into the careers that we have and the space that we did. And then we're going to dive into four or five topics that we feel have been kind of the most influenced by this change that we've seen over the last kind of 20 years or so. So why don't you kick us off with a little bit about how you got into dealing with the cloud and the collab space and, you know, ultimately what led you here?
Sure, sounds good. I guess it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but for me, it's actually, I'm also being brutally honest, is I think the thing that really started pushing me into the cloud is hating to always have to go stand up your different websites and stuff like that from different hosts. Mm. But the big one, I think, that was the one that really started to push all of my stuff over to the cloud was Office 365 and SharePoint Online. Because I'm a developer at heart. And the one thing that I don't do, or at least I did do, but I didn't do it very well, so just to say I didn't do it, was stand up SharePoint farms. They're like, well, what's the disaster recovery story? I'm like, you call somebody else. That's when it's a disaster. You call somebody else and hopefully they can recover you because I'm going to make the disaster even worse. So I was, for me, it was mostly jumping in way back then and getting into when SharePoint Online was coming online with the SharePoint 2010 implementation. Then it was more of a 2013 implementation. And now it feels much more evergreen, much more of a flowing kind of a process here. So, I mean, that was a big thing for how I got into it. How about you? How did you get into this whole thing?
Before I get into that, your comment about making matters worse, there's this great saying from Commander Hadfield, who's a Canadian astronaut, who said, no matter how bad the problem, mashing a whole bunch of buttons can usually make it a lot worse. So, which coming from an astronaut, I thought was pretty funny. But anyway, I digress. Honestly, I was dragged in kicking and screaming by Microsoft. I was working for Microsoft in 2002 in New Zealand, and somebody threw this project at me that said, go build this website using this thing called Content Management Server, and which is the greatest product Microsoft has ever made, by the way. Mm. It was an acquisition from a company called Encompass. And actually, many of the original team from Encompass are still working on SharePoint to this day. Mm-hmm. Dan Kogan and so forth are working on the SharePoint team. It has a long sort of history and from all the way back from Encompass. So that's kind of how I got exposed for the first time into content management server, site server, commerce server, trying to jam all of those things into one thing mm-hmm. with SharePoint. And that kind of led off into the intranet space and so forth. And then really the cloud piece was, I was working on the SharePoint team in Redmond and the engineering team. We were working on SharePoint 2010, I think it was. Yeah, WSS 3, SharePoint 2010. And when I came to this show a number of years ago, I told the story about how Microsoft went to the cloud and how SharePoint went to the cloud. And it started with one dude, like one guy was the cloud guy. And because the BPOS team came to us and said, your product doesn't really run very well in the cloud and we need you to help us. And so this poor guy, he's actually still with the team as well, which is even funnier. He didn't get completely beaten down. He was responsible for making SharePoint cloud ready. And it went from one guy to two guys to five guys to, I don't know, 600 guys? Yeah, I guess people, I should say, all across Microsoft from different teams, but definitely the SharePoint team. And they've been, you know, they've been working on it ever since. So that's kind of my first foray into the cloud. Was I was working on a set of features for WSS and they said, oh, you've got to think about this as it comes to cloud deployment first and, you know, worry about the on-prem piece later. This is when Microsoft gets something in their mind. It's like a child with a new toy in front of them. They can't let it go. And so the cloud came along and it was like hanging a stick in front of a donkey. And all they could see was the carrot, not the stick. Man, I screw up analogies poorly, don't I? The carrot looked pretty good. And so they started focusing on the shiny thing and running towards it. And that was what ultimately became Office 365. But that was kind of my first foray into it.
Yeah, so I described like my foray into the whole like cloud stuff. I think going back farther than that was a lot of what we're going to talk about today too is around the collaboration space and how that's changed. And for me, I also kind of dove into it with Content Management Server and with SharePoint Portal Server 2003. Had a bit of a rocky start, as our listeners on the show who are tuning into the live broadcast don't know the whole story. Everybody in the room here apparently knows the whole story if you came to the keynote yesterday. So a bit of a rough start, but it ended up okay. But yeah, I dived into the whole like SharePoint Portal Server 2003, Microsoft merged the two products together, SharePoint Server 2003 and SharePoint and Microsoft Content Management Server. Nobody was doing web content management at the time, and it was like, I understand both these products. The collaboration guys don't understand the content management side. So I'll just do the WCM stuff. And somehow, like by default, became like the WCM guy. I was like, okay, well, I can do this. And the little secret was it was nice being a WCM guy because the licensing to do a public-facing SharePoint site.
Oh yeah, brutal.
It was like 40 grand a pop.
Yep.
You needed at least two or three of those servers, plus the Windows license and the servers and all that stuff. So my billing rates, well, in my eyes, were way too high. In the grand scheme of things, really small thing on the project. So it's a really good thing to do. You jump into a project, like if you're want to be involved in like nuclear engineering, you don't have to know nuclear engineering. But if you just say that I only work on nuclear engineering projects, those are billions of dollars, you can charge really high rates for that because you're just a blip on the budget.
You get consulting tips. This sounds like it's worked out right for you so far.
Worked out yesterday too. I got lessons learned on that one.
There you go. All right, so quite a lot has changed over the last 20 odd years. Yeah. And it really just sort of struck me that Microsoft's been in this business for 10 years now, and it seems to have just gone by in a flash. That we really only seem to have been getting started, and that it's even a real option for many businesses and customers today. And they're still thinking about how do I begin my cloud journey and things like that. So, you know, this stuff takes quite a while to sort of permeate and be adopted in things. But what are one or two things that you've really seen that you think have completely changed your work life or your customer's work life in the last 20 years or so? Something that you did 20 years ago, you don't do anymore, or vice versa?
I think one of them that I think is the most visible one to me was the consumerization of IT, the whole bring your own device thing. I don't work in a corporate environment now, but I remember when I was working in the corporate environment. I mean, it was always like you had your company issued phone. You got to turn your company issued laptop. And now so many times when you go into a job or something like that, you don't get a company issued laptop or you don't get a company issued phone. It's more of, hey, I'm going to bring my iPad to get my stuff done. I'm going to get bring my phone in to get my stuff done. And how business in the cloud has had to change around that model and say, like, I want to make sure that we have a way to manage those things. If you're taking corporate data on your phone or something, how is that going to be affected? Products like Microsoft Intune and being able to control those things. That was a big one for me. I think another one too is around, you know, the way you learn and the custom versus out of the box or build buy decision. Does it make sense to build everything yourself or does it make more sense trying to use something out of the box? That's something I think that especially in, I would say in our world, because SharePoint's so prevalent at this conference, is that I think that's one that I think that we all kind of struggle with because over time, for so much time that we had, we would always want to go build something new or build or customize something inside of SharePoint. And now we really need to take the model, or at least in my opinion, I think that I'm echoing what Microsoft wants, is that we need to take the model now or the approach now that SharePoint is really a SaaS product and we need to just use it as it's been given to us. We can extend it, but we don't want to go in and crack the master page and do a bunch of stuff with that or build, you know, so much more stuff that's going to try and really customize and change how the product works. Problem is, though, is that so many of us that have been doing this for the last 10-ish years or so, we've got the baggage of being allowed to do those things. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I think for me is the way we learn. That's a big thing for me where I'm more in the education space. I spend more time training people, you know, speaking at conferences, writing content for Microsoft and for other companies as well on how they're going to go through and to adopt all this stuff, how they're going to build out all their content and how they're going to learn. And, you know, in the past it was, let's go buy a book and let's go run through the book and everything. And that, I mean, does anybody even buy the tech books anymore for this stuff? Oh, there's somebody in the way back of the room. So one person does, but I'm sure, you know, some people still do the books, but it's more that, you know, we want, with things changing so quickly, it's so hard to write the printed materials. You need to be able to do things like video-based training and blogs and content that like Microsoft can publish documentation. And I can go in and I can make a change to those docs after they've gone through and published it because there's some stuff that I found. So those are some of the really big topics to me that have really changed my life.
You know, it's really interesting. You mentioned the custom build versus buy topic or concept, right? And when I was working on the SharePoint team, we struggled with this every day. We saw all these folks out there in customer land looking at SharePoint and going, I just want it to look different, right? Because WSS was pretty ugly, let's be fair. And people wanted to tweak it. And so they started looking at the files on the file system and starting to find out how it kind of worked under the covers. And the next thing you know, the product team are looking at it going, hold on a second, what are you doing to our product? You can't do, that's what you need to make it successful. And then we started adding features to start building APIs to let people interact with SharePoint in particular ways in a more sort of contract-based manner. And now we're seeing with the SharePoint framework that sort of API-ification of the UI in many ways to sort of more clearly define that contract and make it more supportable and more extendable, but still have it be a great product out of the box. But bringing it back a little bit, one of the other topics we discussed is being able to, or that we've really noticed changing a lot over the last 20 years or so, is being able to work from anywhere. And, you know, you probably started your careers and weren't allowed access to your email when you weren't at work. And now, you know, it's kind of like you see people on their phones and so forth. They can get access to that sort of stuff from anywhere. So it starts with anything as ultra simple and as benign and as obvious as that now was completely non-obvious and out of the norm, you know, 10 or 20 years ago. And so that's a topic we're not exactly experts on, but we know that we've got a set of great speakers here at the show that we thought we'd call on. And so I'd like to introduce Sue here, who's going to talk to us a little bit about working from anywhere and the digital workplace. Sue.
Thank you. So I may take things in a little bit of a different direction. I am a deep technologist. I am not a developer. I'm a regular person who spends time focused on the people side of technology deployment. And for me, being able to work from anywhere means I have to be comfortable with the tools that I'm using to work from anywhere. And the biggest challenge I see in organizations today is that not everyone in our organizations is 100% comfortable with the tools that are available to them in the digital workplace. And our challenge as people focused on developing solutions is we have to bring everyone to the same level of information or digital literacy. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the biggest barrier to success with the digital workplace and the empowerment of our users to use the tools that we've given them. Mm-hmm. And it means we need to spend a lot more time focused on training and making people comfortable with the tools, making sure they have the skills to search, find, and evaluate content. So how can we find things? How do I know that this is the truth? Teaching people in the organization to avoid things like .v1, .v2, .final.
We've all done it.
This time I mean it, _sh comments. Now, that is the rampant disease that I call versionitis is a huge challenge in organizations. And I think part of what will make us all competent in this new land of work from anywhere and digital workplace is making sure that our teams understand these best practices.
So do you think Paul Manafort and Rick Gates would have benefited from some version control lessons in SharePoint? I'm joking.
Well,
no politics. Yeah.
Well, maybe we also know what is appropriate to put online and what's the right medium for which type of conversation and the right place for all those conversations.
Are we now talking about our kids now too, or is it?
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, you mentioned training is a really big part of it. And often we, as technologists and as techie kind of people, we forget this, right? We build products and we use products and we just kind of figure it out, right? We look at a UI and we click all of the things until it works. But a lot of folks aren't quite as comfortable with that change. And I guess with apps on people's phones now and technology being much more accessible, have you seen the way that people learn and consume that or that learning experience change over the last wee while?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to consider different ways that people learn and not everyone learns the same way. I think it's really important also to recognize that our attention spans are pretty limited for learning, and we have to deliver training in a way that is consumable. So I talk a lot about small chunks of consumable information, 2-minute videos that people can watch to get advice on the specific topic that they are trying to solve in the moment. I mean, it's very rare to get 4 days to come to a training class to learn about how to use a product. And oh, by the way, if that product requires 4 days of training, I think we got a problem.
Gotcha.
So I think we need to think about how we build solutions so we don't need as much training. And we do need to think about different ways of communicating how to access that technology.
Makes me feel very good to hear you say all of that, because that's how I'm doing my training business. It's lots of little 2-minute or 10-minute or 5-minute videos on like something that's really focused that people can do this stuff with. So we really appreciate you coming up here and giving us your thoughts here on this whole thing. Again, this is Sue Hanley, who is speaking here at the conference. You know, we do a fun little thing too at the end of when we have people on the show. We do it as well. CJ and I do ours at the end. But we ask you to come up with a pick, and it can be a link to absolutely anything, or 2 links or 3 links to anything that you can think of, as long as it's appropriate. So not to say that you wouldn't do that, but we have had some guests that we've had to make that very clear about, Mark. So do you have any picks that you'd like to share? These are things that can be totally unrelated to what we do, like on a day-to-day basis, interesting things to you, whatever it is. Do you have any picks for us today?
I do, and I just want you to know that I agonized over this more than anything else you were going to ask me to do today. So first, I will, in your show notes, give you the link to a fabulous article that I actually finally read on the plane coming here about the digital workplace learning framework. And this woman, Elizabeth Marsh, has basically taken everything in my head and written it down. So I'm only sorry she did it before me. But anyways, lots of great advice about how to assess sort of where your organization is and strategies and tactics for driving that learning experience forward. So that's my topic-related pick. And then I know you guys like to talk about your passion about space and about Legos. Well, I have just...
Lego.
Apparently, I actually do know this, that in the U.S., we do use the plural, but it is not technically correct.
Exactly.
So I do know that. But I knew that... I also know that it's considered to be an acceptable form here. Because I listen to a grammar podcast. So that is one obsession. Okay. All right. But I have just 2 words, which is my version of your obsession, and that is epic pass. So I'm a skier, EpicPass.com. So people may object to the fact that Vail is now owning every ski resort in the world. But my pass covers Utah, and I skied in Park City this year. And then last week I was at Whistler and didn't have to pay a dime because I had my Epic Pass. So
nice. I'm definitely down with that. I'm a big skier as well, and just down the road from Whistler. So that sounds pretty good. Well, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you.
We're really appreciative of your time. And everybody give a round of applause to Sue. Okay, so moving right along, still on the topic of how IT has changed, obviously a lot of the sessions here this week and the last couple of days have been about Office 365. And hands up all of you who are in Office 365 already or working for organizations already in the cloud. Hands up, I'd say that's a solid 40, 50%-ish. Oh, 51. What about those of you who are still 100% on-premises? Anybody who's 100% on-prem? A few less, yeah. That's a decent number. Well, that I would say is definitely one of the things I don't think is any surprise to anybody that we've seen change over the last wee while is the move to the cloud, right? Or as we said before, somebody else's data center. And you know, what reminded me of this is, or a comment that I remember hearing many years ago was the head of IBM saying there's only going to be room in the world for like 8 or 12 computers. I can't remember the exact number. And we laughed our heads off. We thought that's hilarious. Bill Gates is up on stage, you know, giving everybody a PC in their lounge and in their bedroom and in their study and office and all that, putting a PC on every desk. And then there's the old guy from IBM who's like, no, 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 there's only going to be 12 computers in the world. Turns out he was right. And we're all getting pretty close to 12 computers again. They just happen to be really, really big ones. And maybe it's going to be less than 12. It's going to be 3. So instead of us waffling on about this, we thought we'd invite Stephanie Donahue to come up and talk about how the world has changed with regards to the move from on-prem to the cloud. So everybody, big round of applause for Stephanie. So Stephanie, you're on the front lines of this stuff in the field. I sit up in the ivory tower up near Redmond and are pretty clueless about what's really happening with real projects and real customers. So obviously you're working on these projects day to day and you run a business that is, you know, focused on this kind of stuff. So I guess in your words, what's the biggest set of changes you've seen in projects over the last few years as it's relating to the cloud and how customers are approaching these projects?
So probably the biggest changes we're seeing are around the planning process for getting your implementation going, around the stakeholders that are involved, and the expectations kind of around that project. And when we start looking at helping someone implement Office 365, before with SharePoint, you used to have to worry about the servers and the service accounts and on the technical side of things that you were taking care of. And it's completely shifted to, you know, Sue referenced this too, it's very business oriented now. So you're no longer having to worry about the technical side. You know, I've been doing this, gosh, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 or 9 years with SharePoint. And for a long time, I never saw anyone but IT in these implementations. And now I spend almost 100% of my time with the business in conjunction with IT so that we're making sure that we're figuring out what they need. We're not just deploying technology for the sake of technology. Mm-hmm. The other piece of that is that we're also getting invites to talk to people that are in the business without IT, which is an interesting shift that, you know, we'll work with corporate communications departments, tax departments, marketing departments, and they're calling us without IT because IT knows the back end is secure. They've got their job done. And now they've allowed the business to go out and kind of do what they need to do to get that business process moving. Yeah. That's a huge shift from a budget perspective. Mm. You're not having to spend all that money on the tech. So you can really push the business forward with the process.
Yeah, I was just going to say on the financial side of projects, right? A lot of it used to be tied up in buying infrastructure and racking things and all the network and security and all of the management and ongoing operations of that stuff. Do you feel that that's freed up budget or taken it away for deployments and projects that you've seen recently?
So that's a difficult question. I think it's shifted. I think it frees it up when they go into it expecting to have to deploy an on-premises server. And they go, oh gosh, we've got this huge budget if we go to 365 instead. I didn't know that it was good enough to go to the cloud right now. In those scenarios, we're definitely seeing a bigger budget. But I think if that's not the case, then sometimes we have to go in, as you mentioned, phases, you know, taking off little pieces at a time. And in some cases, we've taken 18 months to 2 years to get an implementation moving because they've needed that time to prove that they need the technology, that they can use it and be productive. And then once things really start to take off, the budget comes out of nowhere.
Gotcha. You know, one other thing I was going to ask you about was about the nature of the projects. You said you spend more time with the business now than, you know, than IT historically and in the past on these types of projects. Are the kinds of things that you're building changing as you move to the cloud as well? Or is it, at the end of the day, they're trying to solve the same types of problems, I imagine, but the way you approach them is slightly different. No more full trust code in the cloud, for example, with SharePoint. You know, you've got Mark cracking out lots of JavaScript solutions and UI sort of extensibility pieces and things like that. Are the nature of those kinds of projects changed as well? And more or less technical and different kinds of projects?
What's interesting is and I just did a blog on this recently, where we're seeing the publishing intranet site replacement that's going to the communication site templates. Mm. But we're seeing the collaboration shift from subsites and SharePoint out to Microsoft Teams. And the dynamic there is that we're not doing as much customization up front to get them moving because, you know, with SharePoint, we would give a customer a site and train them. And then, you know, there's this learning curve with picking it up. When we give them Teams and show them how to collaborate, a couple weeks later, they're demoing back to us and they're doing things that we never expected to see. And we're like, that's cool. We're going to, you know, take that and tell our other customers about it. So I think from that perspective, it's a little different in terms of approach. But we're still seeing the need for business process. We're still using Outlook way too much. That's something that we're really struggling to get away from. So we still need forms. We still need workflows. But the need also includes mobile now, which is a pretty big deal.
And on the go, I imagine.
Yes. Yeah.
So I've got a bit of a different question for you. So you talked a lot about like how what you're seeing now and this cloud world that we're living in, we're seeing how like SharePoint and Office 365 is still relatively new to all of us. Still relatively, when you look at the big picture and stuff, and we say 10 years, but really, you know, having companies that are, when CJ asked you how many of you are fully in the cloud, that question, that response would have been totally different just 3-4 years ago. Mm. So you know, you've been in this consulting business for a little while now, and you've seen this, you've been able to have your foot in both sides of it. Purely from your opinion of it, like, do you enjoy doing this more? Do you enjoy these kind of projects that are more cloud focused and less kind of on-prem deployments? Is it easier to go through and to get customers up and running? Is it easier on your business to be able to deliver more, to get things in people's hands more, cost better? I mean, just kind of like your feeling of like, do you like your job more with this world that we have?
100%. I love what I do from a strategy perspective because I'm no longer concerned about does it work or does it not work. You know, your biggest problem on-prem was making sure you set everything up right so cumulative updates didn't break the heck out of everything, right? That was your win. But now we're changing the way people work. I mean, we took a global manufacturing company with legacy intranet sites and legacy applications that looked like they were from the 80s. They are now deployed most of the workloads across Office 365. They have mobile forms all the way down to their manufacturing plants. They're doing those on their phones even. They're using the Surface Hub. They're using Teams. They're using the collaboration spaces in addition to a global multilingual intranet. And that's cool. That's really neat to be part of that. So I'm thrilled to be where I am. And I'm really excited about where things have gone over the past. And really, it's been the past year. Because I do a Taming the Hoarder session. I'm doing it later today. And I've always kind of quizzed to see where everybody's at with their versions. Because I try to cover, you know, not just 365, but 2010, 2013 to give them options. And what I'm seeing out here is, in the past year, it's shifted. It's a huge shift, which is exciting.
It's fun to see that pace.
Yeah.
I think we've seen more messaging from Microsoft recently about the adoption of SharePoint in Office 365 as well. And if you asked me this a few years ago, I would say it was almost nothing or very, very low percentage points. And everybody started with email, right? Email was the first thing you moved because exactly the same in the cloud, pretty much. And nobody likes running their Exchange servers. And so you pop that in Office 365 first. And it really seems that there's been a big wave, even in the last 12 months. And I only think that it's happening because it's sort of in the 3 to 4 year wave or cycle for intranets. And now people are considering, well, we've already got our mail there and we're comfortable with Microsoft. And so now we're going to start moving the rest. So I think, Microsoft have been signaling big upticks in usage and adoption for SharePoint in the cloud as well, which is nice to see additional workload. So this is the big test. Stephanie Donahue, what is your pick?
All right. Well, I had to think about this one for a while. I own a business that is my hobby. So I don't have anything exciting that way to share, but I do have someone that I've been following on Twitter for a while.
Ooh.
Joanne Klein. And she has been doing a phenomenal job with the content management side of things. I'm seeing more blogs and YouTube videos pop up on retention policies. And kind of going back to that idea of now we can push business processes forward, we're also now going to see a need for more of the retention policies, the life cycle of the sites and things like that. So I think she's really doing a nice job in an area where we don't have a lot of information. Her Twitter handle is Joanne C. Klein. And definitely check her out. She's got some really good stuff.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for coming up and spending some time with us. We appreciate you coming on the show. Good luck with your session later. And everybody go to Stephanie's session, obviously, and learn more about this. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Cheers.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
Okay, AC, we have put our guests under a lot of pressure with their picks, but now it's time for you and me, my friend. Every week, this is a struggle to make sure we keep the quality and consistency of our picks on the show.
Sometimes
they're really late.
Yeah.
So just warning you ahead of time.
Yeah. Sometimes one of us does a better job of the other one, too. It depends on who it is on each one of the shows.
I try to keep a little bookmark list of picks as I go through the week, and we record 1 week in advance for our show coming out. And so, you know, sometimes it's last minute pressure to come up with a good pick. But what have you got for us this week?
I've got two picks, and I'm actually going to be kind of falling down on my theme of space, but kind of not. So the first one, I found this to be really interesting. I started getting a little bit more into the home automation stuff in the last few months or so. Black Friday sale was really nice to jump into the whole smart things world. And the second you get into this whole home automation stuff, you quickly find that it's like, oh my God, there's so many different standards and options that are out there. And so, which is kind of ironic, right? Oxymoron, there's many standards. Well, Mozilla has announced an open source framework or an open framework for the Internet of Things, where people can create these different things and publish them using their framework. And then you can easily find and consume these. It's kind of like a global clearinghouse or directory of all these different things. So I found that to be really interesting. Just also as a little bit of a footnote, these picks that we have from each one of our guests, from CJ and I, from Mark, from Sue, from Stephanie as well, that you'll find all of these links in our show notes for this episode, which will be published next Tuesday or Tuesday. For the people who are getting this on Tuesday, will be episode 241. My other pick is, I found this site from this one thing this guy did. It's a history of video games. The guy takes one game like a month or every other week, and he just details the hell out of it. And the one that caught my eye was one called Wing Commander 2. Anybody remember that game? Oh, yeah. All right, man. See, I jumped into this. I got a link here for you. When you look at this site, it just pops up right away, and it's the Karathi. Remember those guys, the bad guys? Oh, my God, it was so cool. He just details everything. And it's like, look, here's the top 10 list of all the games that were being sold at that time. It was 1995, MS-DOS games. And you see all these things listed, SimCity, SimEarth, Wing Commander, Star Fortress. And it's like, I felt like a kid again.
Yeah, nice.
On my birthday when I turned when I didn't really feel like a kid again. So, how about you, my friend? What picks do you have for us? Well, I know what your picks are, and I'm already sunk deep into one of your picks, so go ahead.
You know, I did have two really good picks, but then last night I learned about that you can actually get cheese in a can. And so no, I'm only kidding.
No, you're not. You're not kidding.
I'm not kidding about learning about cheese in a can. I'm learning about using it as one of my picks. But it said on the outside of the can, made with real cheese.
Yes. It's amazing what goes on in a speaker room, guys.
Yeah. So I've learned a lot the last couple of days. But there are two picks in particular that I want to bring up. Sorry about that. One is called Lessons from the Crypto Jacking Attack at Tesla. So AC, I know you own a Tesla and drive a Model S around, and so I'd just like to thank you for my Bitcoin mining ahead of time. Apparently, somebody broke into Tesla's cloud computing capacity through some basic measures. Fortunately, they use AWS in this case, and it wasn't Azure. And there were some open S3 buckets, and they found some credentials and some things they needed, and they managed to get into some of a number of customers' AWS tenants and set up virtual machines basically, or hijacked existing virtual machines and put a little bit of malware on them. And so they've been mining cryptocurrencies on Tesla's bill with AWS, which I thought was fascinating. But there's some very simple lessons to be learned in reading this article and securing your cloud resources. The other one I saw the other day, which was kind of related to this, is, you know, the favicon? I don't even know how to say it. That little icon thingy that shows up in your browser for a website. You know, that's that one that never, if you've ever built a website, you can never get it to uncache itself, right? It's, if you screw up your favicon, you're forever there. Anyway, somebody's managed to put JavaScript in those. And so when you go visit a website, the favicon comes down, the browser loads it, the JavaScript runs, and they're mining Bitcoin in your browser now, which, it's a real thing happening in the world now, which is kind of terrifying at the same time. But
very cool.
Yes, very cool. Really nerdy and pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
So that's crypto jacking and the epidemic going along with that. We'll link to that in the show notes. The other one is a UFO incident in the United States down in Oregon that recently happened. And so there's been a Freedom of Information request that's been delivered upon for an October 2017, I think it was, incident. Yep. Where there was this fast-moving blip that showed up on radar in the Oregon air traffic control pattern. And there were pilots that looked out the window and could see this thing flying about, and it joined the traffic pattern. And I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure there's life out there somewhere else other than us. But anyway, these people saw it, and it showed up on radar. And now the Freedom of Information request, they've got the air traffic control audio from that incident. They scrambled F-15s to go and intercept this thing. But by the time the jets got there, it had dropped off radar, and nobody ever saw it again. And so they've released the audio, and they've released the radar traces and all that sort of stuff, which are super nerdy if you're into this sort of stuff, kind of geeky. And the story is fantastic. If you're into this sort of weird and wonderful stuff, you can go listen up on the website and go hear these guys freaking out about these unidentified flying objects.
Yeah, that was, we were planning out our show, and CJ posted this link on our little planning document that we have. And I think we got totally derailed for a bit. I mean, there are some really, really cool stuff. Watching the flight controllers and everything, like, and then hearing a pilot saying, yeah, I'm looking out my 1 o'clock window, 37,000 feet. This thing, like a white plane, and it's really moving. Can't figure out what it is. And it's pretty cool.
Nice. Well, those are our picks. You can get them in the show notes. We'll publish them on Tuesday up on microsoftcloudshow.com. Tune in on iTunes and give us a decent review if you think we're halfway decent, or on Overcast on iOS or the Google Play Store and things like that. We hope you've enjoyed the show for this week. Thank you all very much for coming. Thank you to our guests and our host, Mark Rackley, for putting the show on. We hope you had a great week, and we look forward to talking to you for the remainder of the day. Thanks again.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show, or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.